With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wrestle me, Mark.
Fuck you, Peter.
What is this? Some kind of invasion of bad language and bad behaviour?
I've been led astray.
You, Eric Bischoff.
Screw you, Bischoff. Screw you, the man.
No.
If you're listening to this, welcome to our cult.
Yeah, we're punching upwards. Fuck off. Hear that, Tony Blair? Fuck off.
Piss off, you! We are talking today about ECW One Night Stand 2005. What are your first impressions?
My monocle fell into my soup. I was so shocked. It was really fun, actually. It took me back to like the smaller shows that we used to get in the earlier years of WrestleMania. And although there was a lot of bad language, it just seemed a bit more fun and a little less storyline heavy. There were a few players I wouldn't mind have heard the story of. Like, I wouldn't mind a bit more storyline certain times. But, no, it was good. It was
Did you find it in the main very confusing?
Yes, because it was like a bizarro world. It looked like, you know when you said that you had a schoolyard full of kids pretending to be wrestlers and they'd made their own characters?
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. It was just like, I've never seen these people before. I don't know what their backstory is. Who's the Blue World Order? All this shit. All this blabbering shit that I'm confused about. But, I'm hoping you're going to tell me, because you're quite frank, Mark.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it is that thing of if you had £600 and someone said, look, we've got a venue, can you get wrestlers together? And you went, do you know what? There's a way of me doing this where I can keep £500 and I'll spend £100 on getting some blokes and they'll do a good enough job.
Yeah.
And it was slightly like that. It really was like that. But there was this odd thing where ECW became quite, you know, it became a real cult. Mm. Not even a quite about it. It became a massive, massive, important key part of wrestling in the 90s.
Right.
And really, it's the effects that it left behind. Mm. They can still be seen today. And they're still quite badly missed by a lot of people. Mm. Basic story of ECW. It starts up in the early 90s under a guy called Todd Gordon. It's part of the NWA. And they bring in Paul E. Dangerously from WCW. Paul Heyman,
right,
who becomes the creative booker. Mm. And he's a very, very great wrestling mind. He's just got it. He understands what crowds want to see because he is a huge fan himself.
Yeah.
And what he'd noticed is the WWF and the WWE, they weren't really catering in the early 90s for the more adult fan, the people who had watched wrestling when they were younger and they wanted to continue doing so. Well, you couldn't really do that in the WWE of like 1993 and 94. It was all clowns and mailmen and human fish. WCW was always sort of, you know, slightly struggling to actually connect with an audience. Mm. And so what he did was he took this small organisation and he just, with a sort of messianic zeal, began promoting the wrestling he thought that people wanted to see.
Right.
Older people. And he hit into a fan base that weren't being catered for at that time. And what ended up happening is that ECW, it was always the number three promotion. It never had a great deal of financial backing. And it, indeed, really money troubles were the thing that polished it off. But it became the number three organisation in the USA.
Yeah.
It was the little engine that could. Mm-mm. That's the sort of thing you read in, like, American things when they talk about ECW. And I don't think that's a book we had over here.
No, the little engine that put two fingers up to the man.
Exactly.
And took a woman's top off.
It was the Gruffalo, but very different. And sometimes really horrible and violent. it brought in a sort of sense of wrestling being a darker, far more violent, much more exciting, and just sort of anything could happen. That was something that I think is really underestimated with ECW, is that it brought in a sense of you never knew what was going to happen next.
Yeah.
They were obsessed with impromptu matches. They were obsessed with big sort of surprises at the end of a long match that would make the crowd actually pop rather than go, oh God, there's interference.
Yeah.
And you can really go back and watch their stuff. Not all of it's dated as well as this pay-per-view.
Right.
This pay-per-view is again, a fascinatingly, if you like dull stuff, set of circumstances as to how it came about.
Right.
So ECW, the first real mention of it in WWE is, I think, in about 1995 at the King of the Ring, where there is a terrible match going on between Mabel, who's a great big fat wrestler, who later became Big Daddy V and Viscera,
right,
and okay. Savio Vega. And it's just appalling. And the crowd begin quite angrily chanting, ECW, ECW. Mm. Over the years, that chant has become known as EC-dub, because the way that people shout it, EC-dub, EC-dub, it tends to be more like that. And there was a sense of there was something underground with ECW that actually even Vince McMahon sat up and noticed. And he began a working relationship with Paul Heyman. They used to pay him, I think, $1,000 a week or a month to act as a consultant. And basically, it was just keeping their hand in.
Yeah.
It gave them first dibs on the talent over WCW. So they have this long working relationship. ECW ends up on TNN, gets TV, starts doing well. It never really pays for itself. And ultimately, when they lose the TV after 3 years, they sort of realise there's no way for this to keep going. Mm. They can't find another TV station. And they wind up in bankruptcy. I think they owe something like $8.8 million.
Right.
And that's to the wrestlers, but it's also to all the people who have supplied them. Mm. So what happens is WWE step in. And after ECW has gone bankrupt, they purchase ECW. So in 2001, when it's shut, they have the Invasion pay-per-view where they bring in ECW.
Yes.
But at that point, I don't think they own the rights to the name ECW. It's only they right. buy it when the bankruptcy thing finishes. They actually sort of purchase everything that remains of the company. What's sort of interesting is they seem to have just paid off the debts, and then they've got access to the video library and all the trademarks and things like that. So it seemed like a very cheap way of doing it. But what they have suddenly in 2005 is they have the ECW library.
Yeah.
And they begin to reintroduce ECW, and it culminates with this pay-per-view. Mm. So they've done a couple of books, and they've done a really well-received DVD about the history of this small organisation. And now they're going, OK, can we monetize it going forward? Rob Van Dam, who was a big part of ECW, he approached Vince McMahon and said, look, you've got a lot of people from ECW and now in the WWE. We still hear the fans chanting ECW when we come out. Why don't we do a one-off pay-per-view?
ECW, sure.
Where we put it back on and have a reunion. And that's exactly what happened. Credit to WWE. What I found fascinating about this is they made the decision to try and keep it close to its roots.
Yeah.
So they have this event take place in the Hammerstein Ballroom, a venue that ECW had used for a couple of pay-per-views.
Right.
Totally different from anything they've done in years.
Oh, it's tiny and intimate. I really liked it. It felt like, you know, when you see like wrestling in London or something, and it's like in quite a big place, but like obviously it's a lot bigger because there's like loads of sections going up and stuff, and there's the balcony and stuff. It almost seems regal.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed it.
And what's amazing about it is you suddenly realise with this pay-per-view, it's not really about the matches that happen. It's about the spoken bits, and as a sort of knock-on from that, what it's about is it's about the crowd who are there. It's about the audience. Mm. And this is one of the great audiences in any wrestling show. They are so exciting. And that building, it's all lit up. You can see them all. They're on top of each other. They are a different wrestling crowd from the ones that we've seen up till now.
Yeah.
They all look like the men that you get in like gangbang videos in pornography. Whenever it cuts to them, they're always sort of like...
The older ones look like Rodney Dangerfield, and the younger ones, you're right, just look like, German Googles. German Googles guys.
The German Google guys.
Which is something I'm not sure I should know about, but I remember reading a blog about the German Googles, and it's always stuck with me.
I remember the Financial Times in an interesting article about the German Googles. And specifically, the guys.
The Goo Goo Dolls.
They're an entirely different thing. I must make it clear, I do not like the Goo Goo Dolls.
The Googles.
I wouldn't want the two to be mixed up.
No, I'd hose down either. They're covered in goo-goo.
You've really got into the ECW spirit, haven't you?
I really have.
We're getting into the spirit of it by having a beer.
Yeah, we've not had a beer in a little while.
Yeah. Oh, an organic Czech lager.
Where did you get these? Where did you shoplift these from? Were these like when you go and buy a bottle of vodka, they give you two little... from a posh booze shop, they'll give you a little...
I went to the booze shop opposite your house, where they look down on beer so badly there, because they all sell like bottles of beer, bottles of like spirits and things. And they go in there, and there's one little fridge at the side, and it
has some random freebies that they've got from a supplier.
About nine like, beers in it.
And there's always a different one. Like, I've never seen this one before. Mm. They're always really nice, and they're always like 80 pence.
A pound. A pound for a bottle of beer. In the centre of London.
I know!
I know it's not a key part of their business, but honestly, it's like a life hack. Hey, mate, you're looking for a £1 beer in the middle of London. It's called Jerry's. It's absolutely fantastic.
You go two doors down to the off door, and they say you can't buy. They can only sell you £3 bottles per bottle of beer. Uh-huh. £3 bottle, and they will never sell you less than two.
No,
they've always got to sell them in twos or threes. Apparently,
crazy.
That's a licensing law. Not at Jerry's, though.
Not at Jerry's.
If you're going to buy a Crystal Skull, Dan Aykroyd vodka, you can pop in and get yourself a little cheeky.
They've got that horrible promotional Ron Jeremy outside the door, which is when Ron Jeremy launched some kind of German Google liquid. And it's a really brilliant shop, and everyone's like, it's one of the great wine shops that you can ever go to, spirits and things. It's got everything under the sun.
There's always a guy who's got a little table set out, and he's always got like some extra booze that he's hawking. Do you like tequila? I go, not at 10 o'clock in the fucking morning, though. I'm off to a house party.
That Ron Jeremy is really clever, because most people would see it and go, what a horrible little shop. And you go, someone's not in the know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ron Jeremy doorman.
My dad was good because he visited me 2 days before, 2 days after, rather, Ron Jeremy had visited that shop to sign some of his bottles of his dirty rum or whatever the fuck it was, his dirty whiskey.
I would not want to touch anything that hand has touched.
Ron Jeremy must have been in some kind of fucking WrestleMania or something.
Honestly, there is an alternative. Like a history of ECW with its dealings through porn.
Yes.
So they had Jenna Jameson, the then the biggest porn star in the world. She
Which on German Google, so I'm not bothered.
She was once briefly like the manager of the Dudley Boys.
Really?
The Blue Meanie, who is now your favourite wrestler,
yeah,
I can tell.
Of course he is.
He was for
He's
6 years.
He's got a body type I lust after.
Not just you.
Not just
for 6 years, he was the boyfriend of Jasmine St. Clair.
Oh, I've got a mate called Jane St. Clair George, and she and I sent her a bare naked ladies tribute act called the Jane Sinclairs. And I was like, look at this, you could be in this band. She went, well, it's better than the porn star Jasmine St. Clair.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is she
Weird,
I think she might even have been British earlier on in her life. There's one fact I wrote down about her, which is she is best known for fucking 400 guys in a three-hour video, a record that lasted for a little while before a porn star named Houston fucked 540 guys.
It's just that, I mean, 3 hours, that's... I don't care how into porn you are, that's too long. That's like WrestleMania. At least ECW One Night Stand 2005 was under 3 hours.
Yeah, wasn't
Thank
it?
Thank you.
Wasn't it?
Thank you, Mark, for giving me something I don't have to watch all day.
There was also, I mean, there was a real big thing about wrestlers and strippers go together. Like
Peaches and Cream.
Like Germans and Googles.
Germans and Googles.
Because they work in a sort of nighttime industry. They are freelancers.
Yes.
Freelancers. Like they're going to be discussing.
A lot of them are no paying tax. Yeah. No paying tax. I've gone over state lines. You can't get me.
Can you tell me whether or not you're paying into a decent pension?
Because 401.
But they're just like good bed mates, quite literally, and there were lots of the female talent within ECW were also sort of, you know, working or were former strippers, so it was quite a sexualized environment. ECW, but not in a wholesome way by any means. What's really noticeable about this is they tried to recreate the feel of the original ECW, but there were a couple of problems along the way. So some of the big stars of ECW didn't appear on this pay-per-view.
Right.
The most notable, probably, is Terry Funk.
Yes.
And Terry Funk had been working with the WWE over the years. They really, really wanted to get him. Mm. But Shane Douglas, who was the first ECW champion, and a guy who's fallen out with WWE. He decided to host his own ECW tribute show, I think pretty much the same weekend, maybe
oh
2 days
God.
After.
We have to go. We'll have to get videos and do that next.
It's actually, I think it's slightly better in the ring.
Homeopathic levels of ECW
it's
attitude.
It's called Hardcore Homecoming, and it was a really good show. And Shane Douglas decided to do this because he knew there was no way the WWE were going to invite him onto one of their shows.
Right, okay.
They had a huge falling out over him being a character called Dean Douglas with the IC. They'd given him the Intercontinental belt. Vince McMahon hated him. They had a massive to-do. Shane McMahon would always slag everyone off and shoot interviews. And so there was a sense that those bridges had been burned. He's never actually been back, which is sort of an interesting thing out of everyone. The two people who never came back are Macho Man Randy Savage and Shane Douglas. Yeah. So Shane Douglas sets up his own one, and Terry Funk says, do you know what, actually I think that Shane Douglas's one in some ways feels like the more legitimate ECW reunion.
Right.
So
okay.
He took a pay cut of about a third to do that one instead. The other people they didn't get were New Jack, and I believe they negotiated with him, but there was some outstanding legal issue that they weren't happy with
having
been cleared. Would
with
you
New
believe?
What?
Would you believe?
New Jack?
And they couldn't use him. And the other person who they couldn't use was Raven.
Right.
I think Raven at the time was signed with TNA, which was the only
top
possible rival at the time. Yeah. So they had this Hardcore Homecoming event, which was great. But it tells you in some ways how big ECW was, that you could have these two events pretty much on the same weekend, and both of them sold out. Both of them, you know, really fondly remembered. And in fact, the Hardcore Homecoming, they went on to have about five different shows before it petered out a bit.
I just can't believe Terry Funk was like, hey, I mean, again, still wrestling and stuff, but also just the fact that, you know, he will take a pay cut for the honesty of a good barbed wire fucking back to the back.
Well, and even better than that, I mean, even at this point, everyone was like, well, that's a shame because it's probably his last big payday. He'd be back for One Night Stand 2006.
Oh, really?
So
magical.
He would come back. And actually, he
with
would,
a carrier bag full of Semtex.
I would say, I haven't seen that match in years, but there's a bit where you really go, actually, this is it for poor old Terry. You know, Terry, you've served. You don't have to do it anymore. But as far as I remember, there's a bit where he tries to do a moonsault. And he's probably at this point, what, you know, 92? And he's on something. And to do a moonsault, it's a backflip. And so, obviously, you have to push off. And he basically just pushes off, but there's no sense of him trying to rotate his body. And he just sort of flops backwards. And I think you can see everyone going, oh, dear. Oh, no.
That's a shame. That is a shame. Well, like, quite early on, they shot a big kind of VT of ECW, because I have no concept of what ECW is. I mean, I realise it's quite extreme, stuff like that, but, like, you know, you've got
literally extreme.
You've got Terry Funk hanging a man from his feet.
That's right. Yep.
Over a doorway in what looks like a sports hall.
Yep, that was
a normal
pretty much
thing.
A nightly occurrence. What I really noticed about this, they have these little VTs, the sort of best of packages.
Yeah.
And they don't have one, they have like five.
Yeah.
But every single one of them is as strong as the last one. How many wonderful moments did this thing produce?
The bit where everyone's throwing chairs in.
It's probably the iconic image of ECW.
Yeah.
What a magical night that was. I mean, but the fans, I think Terry Funk calls for a chair in a match. I think it's against Cactus Jack.
Right.
This is so easy to Google, so please feel free to Google
Cactus
it and don't text me. I actually will find it. I know I'm probably wrong.
Cactus Jack very much knows to get the fuck out of the ring very quickly.
And the people just start throwing the chairs, and it gets quite big, and then people are just like, oh, so we've all got to just throw our chairs in the ring, and the whole thing goes. What's really funny is there's a bit of the VT where they show Public Enemy celebrating, and they bring the crowd into the ring.
Oh, my God. That's a genuine public health disaster.
And there are so many people in there jumping up and down. The ring collapses.
Of course it does.
And it just goes, and everyone's still going, this is still the best thing ever. And I was just thinking, it's amazing that, like, a bit of footage where your fans are celebrating so much that they collapse a ring, you're like, that's not even the image of what we do, because we've got something better. Have you seen the bit with the chairs? What the fuck? This is unbelievable.
But, like, the ring bit where it collapses, you're sort of like, somebody must have broken their leg.
Yeah.
Because you know, like, those things where you see, like, I don't know, it'll be, like, in some, like, wedding in India or something, and there'll be a shot, and then the whole thing will just go. And you're like, and three people broke their legs, and a couple of people died. One's got a collapsed lung.
Let's remember, this is the Federation that put on the infamous mass transit incident.
Okay.
So chance about nine people broke their legs, five of them died. What will have happened is they will have said, I think I've broken my leg, and someone will go, if I hear you say that again, I will take you outside and I will kill you.
New Jack is the doctor and he'll be providing this examination.
New Jack, there's three guys have died when the ring collapsed. Would you do us the favour and eat the bodies? Of course I will.
Oh, so I didn't realise that the mass transit incident was an ACW project.
It was indeed.
Project,
yes.
Wow,
yeah.
I see now.
Yeah, you're beginning to get a feel for this horrible little outlaw organisation.
Really grubby. Particularly grubby.
Yeah.
I can see why they didn't make any money. There's a lot of lawsuits floating around.
I mean, what is funny is how different this pay-per-view feels to, like, WWE. Mm. But actually, if you watch the original ECW stuff, it feels very different from that.
Yeah,
it's harking at it, but it's a nicely presented version of it. The old ECW stuff, the other thing about it is most people saw it through videotapes.
through crossed hands, crossed fingers.
or through a television in a court. And when you saw it on the video, it always had that sort of soft VCR fuzz.
Yeah.
And even in the bits that they show in, like, the VT best of packages, they're obviously, it wasn't recorded onto, like, fancy equipment. It's recorded through videotape, or, you know, these fuzzy, quite badly lit rooms.
Nobody
and
kept the masters.
And it just makes it look like sort of something discovered, and that you know, you're not. It looks like snuff.
Snuff, yes. Yeah,
it just looks like snuff.
German,
mass transit.
German Google.
the other thing that you really notice quite early on in this is there's a lot of dead wrestlers. So what you're left with here is a group of men who, some of them against the odds, have survived what is a slightly sort of, they were rough, tough men, and they liked to party. And there's a little bit quite early on where a guy called Pitbull Gary Wolf, he does a little bit, which is a very weird gear change as well.
It's, so he's like a junkyard dog kind of character,
it's hard to explain what they were. They were just, they were a tag team called the Pitbulls.
Right.
And they wore slightly sort of studded leather singlets with, like, choke chains and things. And
Tom of Finland.
Yeah, it is.
But with more GBH.
It is a bit weird. And then Pitbull Gary Wolf, he does a little bit where he's not wrestling. And I don't know whether or not he was injured. He certainly had some horrible neck issues that he got in the course of wrestling. One of which is in the VT.
Horrible
best
neck
of.
Issues, sounds like an ECW wrestler.
Where you see Shane McMahon grabbing the halo that his neck is screwed into.
Oh, yes, okay.
And shaking it. That is one of the... Do you know what? I can watch Mass Transit over and over again just to help me go to sleep. It's a lovely, safe place.
It's like a lullaby.
That little clip of seeing...
Just a man grabbing his...
That halo. Even the word makes me feel sick. And I heard myself say it then. I was like, oh, this is gross. But that neck medical halo. And Shane McMahon is... Shane Douglas is shaking it. Not that hard. And that really upsets me as well, because I sort of get the impression
that
he
real.
Knows this is all very delicate. And this is not a good idea. And he...
Aren't those things drilled into the bone?
Yes.
To fix them.
So that's why he shakes him and Pitbull Gary Wolf moves with it. It's not like a sort of great visual. It's just like, oh, God, this is awful. If you didn't know what it was, you'd just go, that looked shit. But when you know it's screwed into his neck bones and it shouldn't be shaken, the whole thing, that made me feel sick.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
He does this little bit where he just sort of says, and it's all weird as a gear change, where he just goes, I'm the pit bull Gary Wolf, and I'd like to introduce a montage of the people who we've lost. And there are too many people.
Oh, it's crazy.
Who have worked for ECW who have died
like a war memorial.
The last 4 years. It just doesn't stop.
It's like a list of names on a war memorial.
These are all
like
men.
The Kings Cross Fire.
These are all men who are like under 50. Apart from they put in the Sheikh, and the Sheikh was about 80 when he died. And he's slap bang in the middle, I think in an attempt that you sort of go, oh, they're all really young. Oh, no, they're actually, there's an old one. And then it comes back to the young ones, and you go, yeah, but I'm remembering the old one. They were all young, apart from the Sheik.
Right.
The list is Rocco Rock, Terry Gordy, Mike Lockwood, who is better known as Crash Holly, the Sheik, Mike Lazansky, Pitbull Anthony Durante, who was the tag team partner of Pitbull Gary Wolf, Big Dick Dudley, and Chris Candido.
Right,
and
yeah.
There was a bit of controversy at the time where there were some big names were left off that list. Mm. People who'd worked in ECW, like Brian Pillman and Ravishing Rick Rude and Louis Spicoli.
Hang on, Ravishing Rick Rude dirtied his boots at the ECW, did he?
Yeah, do you know, I don't think he actually had an in-ring match. He was always on the outside.
Oh, manager.
Yeah.
In his suit.
Because he did have a real bad neck problem.
Right. Not the place to go, really, ECW.
No. And if you've got one, keep it to yourself, because Shane Douglas is coming for you. But the WWE had actually sort of said, well, this was just a tribute to the people who had died since ECW shut down in 2001.
Right, okay, yeah.
Not the people who were there before.
Right.
The other reason for that is Rick Rude and Brian Pillman, I think both died on the WWE's watch when they were there. And
right,
they don't like to be associated with the death of young men.
No.
Because, I mean, it happens so often, it's almost like it should be investigated. Terrible.
A lot
times.
Of people on this roster who ended up in that lawsuit as well, sort of accusing WWE yeah. of impropriety.
Yes, quite a lot of them were signed to WWE in the wake of this because it was such a big success. But a number of them were not, and the ones who were not, by and large, did tend to be the people who brought that class suit
action. I see.
Action.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not saying it's bitterness, but I certainly think that there were. I mean, it was very difficult to say that some of them had very short stints in WWE where they said we got these concussions and they'd worked at ECW for 5 years
yeah.
where their heads had been caved in on a nightly basis. So it certainly didn't seem like necessarily WWE was to blame for some of that.
No. I mean, some of these bumps are obscene in this show.
Oh,
to be said.
Aren't they? Aren't they?
Yeah, the fans seem to like, in that montage, people seem to like Candido. Who's Candido?
Yeah, Chris Candido. He was a very, very popular third-generation wrestler.
Right.
Very popular with the wrestlers. He'd grown up with wrestling all his life. But he was hampered by the fact he was very small. I think he was legitimately something like 5'6".
Right.
And so he was never going to be in the big time. But he was one of those guys who, had he had the size, he would have been a huge star. Mm. The reason they break out actually in the first match into a chant of Chris Candido is because he had died relatively recently. Oh. He'd had an operation, I think on his leg.
Oh, that was like a blood clot thing,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And it seems to be, I mean, it's hard to know whether it was related to wrestling or not, or whether it was just simply really unlucky. But Chris Candido, in some ways, is probably most famous as the long-term boyfriend of the first diva, Sonny.
Oh, okay.
So all through her WWF career, he was her boyfriend.
Right.
Obviously not all the time, because Shawn Michaels was her boyfriend a few times. And there were lots of other rumours. Certainly David Boy Smith.
How many times have you been the husband of your wife? How many times have you husbanded?
But he was a hugely popular, really good talent, a really good talent. And in ECW, he was very, very good.
Mm.
He just seemed like one of those guys. He was really, really, really good on the mic. He was also really good in the ring.
Mm.
But his death had been relatively recent.
Right,
so
okay.
There was certainly much more of a sort of raw feeling about that than there were for, you know, some of the other guys.
I read some notes like CM Punk was really scared of getting that clot sort of thing.
Really?
Yeah, he was like, every time he went under the knife or anything, he's like, oh, I might get a clot. Like Candido.
Yeah, oof.
I imagine CM Punk's spending power when it comes to fixing himself up is a bit better than Candido.
Considerably better. Should we do the first match?
Mm.
Just because, you know, that's supposed to be why we're here.
Well, it all kicks off with our commentary crew. I didn't even realise it was Mick Foley until I found this in, because Joey Styles comes out. I think I wrote down, if Mike Patton from Faith No More was into anime, that's all I've got on him.
He looks like the son of a very sort of middle class Jewish family who has got mixed up with the wrong crowd. We mentioned Joey Styles a couple of weeks ago because he, when he had a WWE stint, he once knocked Bradshaw to the floor with one punch after he'd been bullied for so long.
Oh, yes, that rings a bell. That's him.
Yeah,
the problem is we do kind of spend a couple of... We do have a gap of, like, a couple of weeks, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. So it's kind of... Oh, I can't remember, because kind of everybody looks... It's starting to look the same a little bit physically.
We're slightly entering, and you notice this when, like, the WWE stars come into this. This is a very bland era for gimmicks and for personas. No one really gets over, and everyone looks a bit the same. I tell you, honestly, after we've done One Night Stand, we're going to have some pretty confusing episodes coming up. The first match is Lance Storm with Dawn Marie versus Chris Jericho. Dawn Marie had been working as a sort of diva in WWE for a few years.
Right.
She does nothing in this match because she's pregnant. And I mean, not that she when she not, wasn't pregnant, she did very much.
No, not that they'd respect anyone whether they were pregnant or not.
No,
I was a wrestler, I'd pretend that I was pregnant whether it was a boy or a girl. Someone would shake my neck.
Going around telling everyone the Undertaker's made you pregnant and not expecting you're going to get into trouble. Magic. This is a really good example of slightly one of the problems with this pay-per-view, which was it wasn't WWE, and you get Lance Storm, who's been in WWE for the past, I don't know, 4 years, and he's done nothing. They haven't used him. You know, he's just disappeared in the shuffle. And because he was in ECW towards the end, they've put him in this match with Chris Jericho, and they have a brilliant match. Everybody loves Lance Storm, and everyone begins going, why on earth aren't they using Lance Storm?
Yeah.
And that's something you see again and again through this. You just go, gosh, it's really possible for people to get over if you stop giving them crappy scripted stuff, if you just let them go out there and do their thing. You don't have to... Lance Storm, I mean, the thing I always used to do with him was they were sort of like, we'll give you this gimmick that you're really boring and you're really sort of like everyone's... you're dull and that no one wants to hear you speak. Well, why don't you just not do that and let him work out what he wants to do? And then he might sell some tickets.
Yeah.
And this is a really, really good match. The two of them had started off in their early days in like Smoky Mountain Wrestling as a tag team. They have a match here. Jericho just has his working shoes on. He looks great as well. Looks really sort of sexy and good. I don't know why he didn't stick with that look for the rest of his career.
We kept changing it, like you said.
Yeah, he will not stop changing it. It makes me very cross. I think Chris Jericho has wasted his career. It ends just with a... I mean, it's just a good match. There's not much you can say about it other than the crowd are really into it. It's the two of them work really well together. It's a nice opening match, really crisp, really fun. And it ends with a kendo stick shot from Just Incredible, which is one of the great weapon shots of all time.
It really whacks him. The kendo sticks. It's like bamboo bound up together sort of thing, it looks like.
That's right, yeah.
Right.
ECW, they popularised, really, what it used to be known as the kendo stick. It became known in ECW as the Singapore cane.
Right.
And that was because, like, in 1994, there was an American student who was done for vandalism of cars in Singapore.
Yeah.
And the crime, the actual punishment, rather, when you were found guilty of vandalism, was to be struck with a cane.
Yeah.
And the American government got very involved in the case, saying, we understand that's the way you do it, but we don't do it that way here. And I think they managed to, like, negotiate
his caning down
from something like 10 to 4. And this guy, he got 4 cane shots.
Right.
And then flew back. But it was quite a big... It was a big, like, international story.
I hope
at the
he got business. He won't be able to sit back in his chair.
I believe... I read in the course of this, like, I read him talking about it happening. He said, and they hit him once with it, and then they instead of sort of going, there is your first one, you know, you naughty boy, they'd go, okay then, Michael, we've done the first one. We're going to move on to the second one now, okay? It's going to sting a bit. And they go, okay, you're 2 through. You've only got 2 more to go. So it was really sort of like, okay, this is being handled nicely.
Yeah. And so a higher power has intervened here.
He said he had 4... He had a little trickle of blood off the fourth one coming down in the back of his legs. And he said it didn't hurt to sit down more than a day.
Right.
And then he had 4 sort of little brown stripes across his bum from where it was. And I believe he, as of like 2008, was a casino manager.
I'm enjoying the fact that you remember all of this.
Yeah, but the ECW, the clever thing that they did was because they were all about sort of pop culture and sort of youth and also a sort of quite South Parky sense of humour, the kendo stick became a Singapore cane in a way that everyone would recognise what that meant. I believe the first Singapore cane that was used by the Sandman, the wrestler who was most synonymous with it, Paul Heyman went outside to his garden and just tore off 3 cherry tree branches, and then they put duct tape around it, and he's like, that's Singapore cane.
Yeah.
And Sandman was like, I don't really know what this is, and he's like, well, no one knows what Singapore cane is, so just use it.
That must be in wrestling, there must be an untapped kind of man goes abroad and raises hell and then gets punished in the befitting manner, like...
like JBL,
that North Korean that American who went North Korean, stole that poster and then came back in a coma.
Yeah,
I mean, less useful. Actually, North Korean defector would be a good wrestler.
That would be good.
Like, he'd be back and he'd have escaped and but he wants to, but then he heel turns and then he's like, oh, I'm actually a spy. Ha ha. You thought I was a North Korean defector.
One of the, the legitimate biggest wrestling audience of all time was for a show that was put on. It's so mental, Pete. This is so difficult to explain having not looked at it, but it was put on, I believe, by Muhammad Ali and Antonio Inoki, and they put it on in North Korea. and they brought over a load of American wrestlers like Ric Flair.
Yeah, I've had a good read about this, and it's I don't think Muhammad Ali wasn't involved, but he had Inokiyev. He'd fought Muhammad Ali, but yeah, kicked his legs off. but Inokiyev had a bit of success putting on a wrestling show in Iraq and releasing some hostages.
That's right, yeah.
Some Japanese hostages, so he thought he could do the same trick in North Korea, which I think worked to a certain extent. And he put it was in Pyongyang, wasn't it?
That's right.
In a big old stadium. Yeah, it's like, yep. What was it, like 120,000 confused North Koreans going, what are we watching here?
Yeah, and they sent over like Ric Flair, you know, who is the party. I think like, you know, it's really worth Googling. Mm. There's a very good article. I presume it's like by What Culture.
It's
a really, really good article where the wrestlers who went explain what it was like.
One wrestler like, just started kicking off. Kicking off on the bus or doing something. He was on a mobile phone, I think, with his... Oh, he's ringing his wife or something, and he's just slagging off, saying it was a shithole country and stuff, and he got in a lot.
I think the line just went dead.
Yes,
I think that's the story. And there's lots of stuff about them sort of trying to leave the hotel.
Fascinating.
And people who they just saw behind them suddenly being in front of them, just sort of going, you are going the wrong way, surely. I tell you, that student who stole that poster, I'd have done exactly the same thing.
Oh, massively. Yeah, definitely. That's a definite
I'd have been in a big old coma. I really would.
Big daddy coma.
quickly, number two, shall we?
Yeah, if you want to. Yeah, cool.
This is a three-way match, another match style that was popularised by ECW.
Right.
Between Tajiri, Little Guido and Super Crazy. the thing about this that's great is they come in with their huge retinues. So Tajiri comes in with a guy called Mikey Whipwreck, who in the early 90s a really, you know, just a brilliant wrestler that changed the game, really. Fast, high-flying, small, but took on big guys. Mm. He was a giant killer, and he was booked really well. They're also with the Sinister Minister. There's a guy called Jim
Mitchell.
It's like
David Guest.
Yeah, he does. The best thing about the Sinister Minister is this is not really a gimmick. So the Sinister Minister is one of two people on this pay-per-view who were members of the Church of Satan.
Really?
So they were proper card-carrying Satanists. And oddly, the other one was Balls Mahoney. He actually says he literally had a card that was like a membership card. So you are a card-carrying Satanist.
Lovely.
Sinister Minister, there was always rumours that he was going to be brought to the WWE in some capacity. He was a very good talker, and it never happened. And it seems like a bit of a missed opportunity, that one. I think he would have been really good. You don't really get much out of him here. But again, worth reading about him. big old Satanist.
Big old Satanist. I like when they start waving the Italian flag and they get boos. It's like, this is in New York. Why are they booing it?
Again, a really clever thing here where you've got Little Guido, who is by that time known as Cruiserweight as Nunzio in the WWE, a less good name. I can't work out whether it's Little Guido's got a sort of slightly negative racial connotation. I don't know.
Right.
But he comes in with the full-blooded Italians, and the full-blooded Italians are made up of a load of people who clearly aren't Italian. So you have Tracy Smothers, who is this Southern wrestler, still going today as well, and just one of the low-key
survivors,
great sort of Terry Funk-esque men of his generation. Right. Just a really funny, strange, ironic hillbilly. Just really good. You've also got... you have got a real Italian in Big Guido, who is a guy who just says nothing. Tony Mamaluke,
Big Guido.
As well. And Super Crazy comes out. And Super Crazy, this is actually a rematch of like a match that happened at an ECW pay-per-view in 1999 called Anarchy Rules. And Super Crazy was a brilliant Mexican wrestler, a really good luchador. He does, in the course of this match, he does a moonsault off the balcony, which is the first time that's ever been done on a WWE show.
Yeah.
No one's ever seen really anything like that before.
Well, Mick Foley went, I've never seen anything quite like that. I was like, we've seen something quite similar with your fat ass good for a fucking table, mate.
Did you not watch the VTs that have been going out? Because we've seen four of them. Tajiri then does his green mist. That comes out.
That's cool.
That's the best.
But his mouth is going to be really powdery. I was thinking, is he going to have to go off and like drink a little bottle of Evian or something?
I still don't know what that mist is.
I don't know. I mean, it must be powder.
It must be something dry.
Yeah.
But what is it? Why is it only wrestling who does it? And it's only usually like Japanese wrestlers who do it as well.
Poster pinch. Gotta be.
Do you think it's poster paint?
It's got to be poster pinch.
You can't put poster paint in your mouth.
Well, it's non-toxic. You put it in kids, because kids eat it all the time.
I'm going to make you do this on a live show.
Green mist. Yeah, I like to do. He's good.
And then Mikey Whipperek does a whippersnapper, which is a top rope stunner. That was brilliant. I've forgotten how much I enjoyed that move. And it's just everything that's sort of fun and good. This match here as well, I mean, I think Tajiri and Nunzio were already signed.
Yeah.
But afterwards they signed up Super Crazy. And having seen the reaction he got in this match and seeing how talented he was, they immediately teamed him with two other Mexican guys who they had on the roster called Juventud Guerrera and Psychosis, who we'll see in a while. Within 2 months, they were called the Mexicals, and they were riding a John Deere lawnmower to the ring, because that's what all Mexicans do. They mow your lawn.
Yes, they do.
They would complain about the way that Mexicans were treated in American culture, and they were supposed to be bad guys that you booed. That didn't work, and they became like faces. There's a funny thing in this period where you had some of the great Mexican talents, certainly on the cruiserweight scene, working in WWE, and WWE had no idea what to do with them, and they squandered them. And I do wonder if those people, apart from like Rey Mysterio, look back and go, I shouldn't have gone there.
No.
I should have stayed, and I could have had 3 prime years of my career not being racially denigrated and instead having amazing matches. You've already got that sort of thing here as well about ECW, about why it worked so well. WWE, very much the same match throughout 3.5 hours, 4 hours, soon it's going to be 7. And what you have here is you have a different sort of styles from all over the world. So you start with two Canadians in Lance Storm and Chris Jericho having a good sort of physical Western style match. The next match, you've got a Japanese star in Tajiri taking on a legitimate amateur wrestler in Nunzio and a Lucha Libre star in Super Crazy. And one thing that people don't really talk so much about ECW, because it's all seen as being violence and barbed wire and sex and sort of drugs, is really the key to its success was it brought some of the great wrestlers from all over the world that you'd never seen before, and it put them in that ring before your eyes.
Hi.
Magic.
Well, I enjoyed this podcast, and we'll be back next week with more from ECW One Night Stand from 2005. Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle me, Peter.
Just a reminder, though, before we chip off, of course, you've got a live show coming up.
We do, yes. It's coming up on the Let Me Just See.
See?
How big is that piece of paper?
That's a check.
This is a check. Wrestle Me on Saturday, the 14th of September, 2019, at 9:30 p.m. at King's Place as part of the London Podcast Festival. And I have good news and bad news.
Oh.
It's good news if you've got your ticket. It's bad news if you hate us and don't want us to perform well when it comes to selling live events. There are, at time of recording, which I think is about 3 days before the podcast goes out, there are 14 tickets left.
Okey-dokey.
So if you would like one, now is the time to get one.
And if you're not going to get one, give your head a shake, unless you are wearing a brace, then you can't.
Can I have permission to do one ECW announcement to the people who haven't got a ticket?
Yes.
Fuck you, you horrible twats.
More red mist than green mist in many ways. But do get your tickets, it's going to be a lot of fun.
I won't swear at you if you come.
Let's not make any promises.
Was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.